Hello and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host, podcast producer, and sports writer for the LSJ, joined by two guys that are only here because they tested a negative three consecutive times on their PCR test, Detroit Free Press beat writer Chris Solari and Lansing State Journal sports columnist Graham Couch. Guys, first of all, thank you for being here. Thank you for being healthy. Second of all, we somehow got to this point. It has been a crazy 2020 with everything, you know, obviously with all the Big Ten ups and downs. But boy, in 4 days from now, we're recording on Tuesday afternoon, we will be playing football. It's pretty crazy, right, guys?
3 days from now. Don't forget that Friday
game. Oh, yeah. How very careless of me on my part. Sorry, Big Ten schedule makers for letting you down there and not giving you the proper respect.
I mean, let's be fair. I mean, how many schedules have you had to look at? I mean, this is the third opponent for Michigan State. I mean, they were supposed to play Northwestern, then they were supposed to play Minnesota, then they were supposed to play Rutgers. And, you know, here's the little hidden thing that's still here, and we're at Tuesday mid-afternoon. Who knows if Rutgers is going to even make the trip? I mean, that's the world we live in right now. I mean, you see games getting canceled the day or 2 days before. So as of right now, game on, right?
Yeah, I mean, and this is probably the most fair matchup you could imagine because it's the two first-year head coaches who didn't get spring practice, who, you know, we know the least probably about these teams other than what they were under their previous coaches a year ago. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, even though Northwestern and Michigan State is like the quintessential, you know, even matchup, the original schedule, this is probably a fair look, and I think I either said or was thinking at the time this latest adjusted schedule came out that this also might have been a favor to Mel Tucker for keeping his mouth shut when some other places were complaining a little bit about there not being football.
Yeah, this is about as close as you can get to it. No offense to Rutgers, but this is as close as you can get to a non-conference game. I mean, that's the reality of where Rutgers has been since Greg Schiano left, now that he returns. I mean, they've been abysmal. They're 21 straight gate losses in the Big Ten. This is, for Mel Tucker, it may be the best opponent that you could get on this schedule at this point.
Yeah, Graham, you mentioned Mel Tucker staying quiet of everything. That basically sums up his press conference this afternoon, and we will get into that a little bit here, actually, in a couple minutes. We'll talk about that. No depth chart was released either, so a lot of unknowns heading into Saturday's game, but we will try our best to parse through previous things said or things said on Tuesday that might be able to take away and trying to build a depth chart and potential starters between ourselves, and then we will make our Big Ten Michigan State preseason picks, and we'll do some over-unders on predicting how certain things will go. Well, first off, let's start with that press conference. Graham, I'm going to have you go first here. What was the biggest thing that stood out to you in terms of what he said, or more accurately, didn't say?
Yeah, he did not reveal a lot, and that's telling. I don't think he's going to be, you know, he's somebody who I think in normal times, and we still haven't seen him deal with us in normal times. And, you know, if there had been a spring practice, there may have been open practices and a lot more dialogue, and we may have a better idea of a lot of things. And I don't entirely know in a normal year whether this will be the way he, acts in terms of a no depth chart or anything like that. But right now, very secretive. And to be honest, what this line stood out about the quarterback position, you know, they obviously didn't announce the starting quarterback. And I still, my gut would say it would be Rocky Lombardi will get the first shot, but then he also said something about, he used the word decision in there. Doesn't mean they haven't already decided as a staff, but it leads me to believe they certainly haven't made that decision public to the players yet. That to me was interesting. I think this might be a year where we're going to fly a little bit blind. And I don't know about whether the not having a depth chart, I mean, he said it basically because it wasn't not a normal year, and you don't know which players you're going to have, and you got to prepare everybody. And that's I can take that. But I don't know that if I was a coach going into my first game that I wouldn't use every advantage I had, and one of those would be not letting anybody know who was playing where.
Well, the interesting thing I thought was a little bit of omission there as well with what he said. I mean, you know, I was the one who asked him, I said, is there going to be a depth chart? And, you know, he continued, he said, you know, we're not going to release one this early in the week. We have our rep chart. Well, one thing he didn't say that he had been previously saying is that those reps were being divvied up equally. And I think that players by this point, you know, in talking to some of the players and talking to Jay Johnson over the course of the last few weeks, once they got to game week, and I think Mel Tucker said late last week, they started preparing. Once they got to that point, they would divvy up the reps based on who they felt would be the one, the two. So, you know, even though they might not have said it outwardly to the players, the numbers of reps going up or going down would certainly, to me, be give these guys an idea of who's going to be where. I'm with you on Rocky Lombardi. I think that particularly because you open with a Big Ten conference game, particularly because you don't have that ability to kind of have the non-conference schedule, I think you go with the veteran guy. You didn't have the off season. Everything, even though it might be a blank slate and from what they previously did, you can't erase the experience factor that Lombardi has. And that's one of the things that Jay Johnson talked about as well. So, but that doesn't mean I think that Rocky Lombardi will have that job long term. I think it's going to be an ongoing competition, and I think we could see multiple starters this year. It would not surprise me at all. But on top of the off season, you also have two road games coming up at Michigan and Iowa that really you need to get all these guys ready. I wouldn't be surprised to see all three guys play at some point against Rutgers Saturday.
Well, we're talking about all this experience Rocky Lombardi has. Why not name him the starting quarterback right now if he has completely earned the job? I think that's the most baffling part. That it actually makes me think that it's not going to be Rocky Lombardi for the first snap on Saturday. I don't understand if it is going to be Rocky, why not give him the confidence, let him know the job is his, and go from there?
Because I think it's a scouting report thing. I think you don't let the opposing team prepare for one quarterback if they have different skill sets, and that's I think it's strictly that for the most part, and yeah, I just think that's where you're it's gamesmanship, right?
This is a coach's dream. I mean, there's not even a spring film, right? I mean, Greg Schiano, you can go back and look at 10 years of history with how he operated Rutgers. It doesn't mean necessarily that it's going to be that way, but there are tendencies that you can pick up on. There are things that you can understand what a Greg Schiano system is. You might be able to go to 1 year of Mel Tucker's tape at Colorado and get some ideas on the offense of what they might do. You might be able to go to Kansas State for 1 year and look at the defense that Scotty Hazleton ran there. But the reality is this is all new personnel. And these coaches, I think the one thing that I've heard quite a bit about from them, they're flexible and adaptable to the personnel that they have. So how do they flex and how do they adapt? We're going to find out on Saturday because nobody else has any idea outside of that building right now.
I will take the L on this, but I am now willing to bet that it'll be Theo Day or Peyton Thorne taking the first snap on Saturday. I have said it. I will pull my Skip Bayless type random pick, and we'll just go from there. But yeah, so
which is amazing because what amazes me is that past 3 years you have been the drum beater for Rocky Lombardi to start, and this is the biggest news of the day.
this is the heel turn of heel turns on Spartan Speak.
The fact that Phil Friend's depth chart has been upended by the pandemic is to me the biggest news of the day.
You just have to recollect your thoughts after all this stuff, after this 2020 that we've had. I've evaluated, I've parsed Mel Tucker's words from today, and I have said what I said.
I think what's most important with quarterbacks is that they emerge from this year with a clear understanding of what they have. And so I'm with Chris in the idea that I think, you know, you might see multiple guys. Now that could change. You think about a guy like Connor Cook who took the job and ran with it. And if Rocky Lombardi plays lights out against Iowa and then they beat Michigan with Rocky Lombardi at quarterback, you know, it may be Rocky Lombardi's show. But I think if there's struggles along the way at any point, you'll see some other guys get a look. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some of that scripted in. Because the beauty of scripting it in is you can tell somebody it's going to happen and they don't feel like they're being replaced necessarily. And I think when you're just trying to deal with, you know, keeping guys engaged and confidence and all that stuff that you want. And if you say, you know, we're going to give the number two guy a series in the second quarter, you know, and if we're up by this, then we're going to come in and give them another series. Then people are on the same page and they don't feel like it's an indictment on them. And I think that's, and I have no idea the way these guys are going to operate, but if I were a coach and I was trying to figure things out with that position, which I think is it's always a critical position, but what makes it more critical this year, and Chris, I wonder if you agree with me here, is just that I think the defense could really struggle. I think the offense at the skill positions, the other skill positions, could have some real oomph and electricity to it here and there, more so in recent years. And the offensive line they're hoping is improved. That the quarterback is the thing that could limit a lot of that progress. So they need to find that guy.
Well, but they're not hoping that the offensive line will improve. They're hoping it'll stay healthy. I mean, let's face it, that's been a big reason why you saw some of the inconsistency at quarterback, and even with Lewerke getting most of the starts the last two, three seasons. I mean, from a defensive standpoint, to me, you know, I think back to that 2017 team, and, you know, we thought at that point that the defense might not be ready to do anything and might still have some hiccups coming out of 2016, and they were lights out. And you've got three coaches that have been around that defense, with bringing back Harlan Barnett and then also Mike Tressel and Ron Burton. So they understand the personnel. I think that's important. And I think the other thing is that you've got a guy in Mel Tucker who is a defensive-minded head coach. So I'm not as concerned about the defense, even though that there is some significant experience because those three-year starters usurped all the reps. From a quarterback standpoint, to me, you know, I look at this and let's look at this in what it is. It's a free year for everybody, right? You're not losing any eligibility. You got a chance that you could rotate these guys in. This is in many ways to me an open audition for next season as much as it is for this season. You know, because, you know, you could have two more years of Rocky Lombardi because it is a free year. It doesn't matter how much these guys play or don't play.
Right.
Same thing with these other guys. So I think that's something that, you know, and again, let's say they somehow start off 3-0. I think the conversation changes, but I think that there's some realism to it, that this is a building block year, not just for Mel Tucker and but also for these guys to get into this program and see how much the changes can impact their individual performances. So, you know, I would not be surprised to see some sort of plan. And it wouldn't surprise me if two or three guys start this year at quarterback. But, you know, I guess we have to kind of wait and see, because they've been, you know, when the head coach is bringing up the true freshman, not named Damian Terry, you know, sometimes I think you got to take pause and realize that they're just obfuscating. When he makes sure that he lets you know that the redshirt freshman is doing well, or the true freshman is doing well, I think you have to understand that they're not going to give us real information until we actually see it on the field.
And you know, to that point, in times where coaches have tried to, you know, anoint guys at Michigan State in the D'Antonio era, sometimes it went horribly wrong. They did that with Maxwell in 2012. And to be fair to Andrew Maxwell, there were a lot of things around him that weren't working. But they did it with Benny Fowler before Benny Fowler was ready. Now, he's had a career in the NFL and became a really good receiver, but he wasn't ready yet. They did it, you know, a guy like Tony Lippett became a great receiver, but wasn't a great receiver at the time they needed him and thought he was going to be like a number two guy. And so sometimes, you know, I don't know that adding the pressure of, you know, because we have not heard them talk about a guy like Jaden Reed, for example, the way people who have seen Jaden Reed play talk about him. They like him, but nobody said, you know, like, you know, I go back to what the Robin Hook, who is the play-by-play guy at Western Michigan, he just thought, you know, this guy's going to be one of the all-time great receiver at Michigan State. Now, that's a really big statement, but Robin Hook's seen Greg Jennings and seen I was a kid who just got drafted by the Titans.
Corey Davis.
Yeah, Corey Davis.
Corey Davis a couple years ago, and other guys. So he knows what a great receiver looks like. And we have not heard them blow smoke up anybody individually. The tea leaves that I've, you know, sort of read a little bit are, and I wrote this for the Sunday column, just trying to, like, Harlan Barnett talking about comparisons to where a group was in 2009. Well, there's a team that struggled. Listening to Ted Gilmore, just there was some tone and there's some things he said that makes me think that there are some concerns overall with the tight end group. I think there's Trenton Gilliston, for example, I think is a pass catcher, somebody who has a really high ceiling and is somebody they may be able to use in a lot of different ways. But you just listen to the guys speak. I think there are some concerns on the roster that they're not going to be where they want to be. And talking to, you know, some guys when they thought the season was going to be canceled, there was a sense among some of that staff that's not a bad deal, that this program really could use a full off season and just a better run up to things. And they don't get that now, so you're not going to say that. But I would not be surprised if they really struggle at certain areas. I mean, you look at the cornerback position. Outside of Josiah Scott, they really struggled there last year, largely. And again, you go back to a year like 2017 where we didn't know what they were going to have and where, and all of a sudden Kenny Willekes and Joe Bocci and Josiah Scott are playing at a very high level as first-year starters. But that doesn't always happen, so we just don't know.
Well, and I think you brought up Harlan Barnett and, you know, in that Josiah Scott situation, I think the fact when we had Harlan Barnett a couple weeks ago and he was asked about Angelo Gross and he was like, oh, I thought maybe I could keep him secret and under wraps. Right. Well, I mean, it's a guy who was Mr. Football in Ohio, you know, I mean, you know, but at the same point, that's the coach's mindset right now. And when you're insulated like that, let's not let too much information out. And it's been a quietly concerted effort. I mean, when you have coaches that are just going to rattle off every single guy in the same kind of platitudes, you know, so that's done for a reason, partly to be a carrot for guys that maybe are behind the curve, partly to be humbling to guys that are ahead of the curve, and partly to not let their opponents know anything. So, you know, that's what I'm saying is, you know, when we see this and again, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with the COVID situation. We don't know if there have been players who have tested positive and won't be allowed to play for 21 days or compete for 21 days. We don't know if there are guys who have opted out that haven't been released publicly. I've heard of at least potentially one more, maybe more, but we won't know that. And that's a fluid situation as well. I mean, guys are doing that in midseason, you're seeing at some schools. So I think that, you know, this is one of those years that beyond anything, you have to trust what you see on the field first and foremost versus anything that you hear, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it does. Absolutely.
Well, okay, let's move on to that depth chart talk. We've talked plenty about the quarterback and who we think is going to be under snap on Saturday. The running back situation is, I think we're all pretty much on the same page that it's going to be Elijah Collins at running back. Now, the wide receiver positions, is that's a situation where they're very deep, and there doesn't seem to be maybe a lot of standouts outside potentially Jaden Reed. Chris, I'm going to have you go first here. What do you project out of that receiving core on Saturday?
Well, I think your starters are going to be Reed, Jalen Naylor, and Trey Mosley. I mean, Naylor came on last year and managed to get a redshirt year. He's got to stay healthy as well. I mean, he had 2 years in a row now where he's had some injuries that have kept him off the field, and they need that speed. And I think Mosley showed in his time last year that he's got some good hands to really do it. I'm interested to see some of the younger guys, three in particular that Mel Tucker mentioned recently were Montori Foster, Terry Lockett, and Ricky White. And White's got one of those speed games, I think, that's going to be interesting to see how quickly it develops and catches on. Foster's a kid who was a basketball player, and Lockett as well, that are kind of making that transition, but they have that athletic ability. And then Trayvon Morgan, who sat out last year and is really at 6'7", one of those guys that you look at and say, boy, he'd be a physical specimen at wide receiver. Perhaps when we talk about things being omitted, maybe he's one of those guys that slides out to tight end in a Jimmy Graham style mode and gives him a different type of pass catch option there. So, but I do think that, you know, Naylor Reed and Mosley to me are the guys, particularly because CJ Hayes is out with foot surgery.
I'm with you there. I think the top three are pretty plain to see, and Naylor, his health, I mean, you just hope that kid can stay healthy, because I think he's got a lot of potential if he does. And Mosley, I really like the way he played late in last season. I think he's got a pretty good ceiling. And then, you know, Jaden Reed, by all accounts, will at least be starting. Whether he's fully ready to live up to all the hype, we'll find out. I think what's also important about that group, and we may see it with a guy like Anthony Williams or whatever, but I think there's first time in a while, the potential for something in the return game that's, you know, gives them an edge that they haven't had in a decade, really since Keyshawn Martin. And it was really baffling, frankly, at the end of the D'Antonio era, why they could never really find that guy. It looked like when Naylor early last year, they might be able to do that. So, yeah, I think the receivers, those top three are the guys, and where the questions begin is if somebody gets hurt or they start, you know, 4, 5, 6, you know, usually you travel 6. You know, who are those guys? And, you know, does anybody young jump in there? But if those three are healthy, I would expect those three to look like to be the best trio that they've had since 2015. And I do think it's a chance to be a position of strength for them.
I was going to say, Laurice Nelson is back as well, and he's another guy to keep an eye on. I think he's got the most experience of that group. So as a leader, I could see him, especially with Hayes out, I can see him playing a bigger role.
We talked about the tight ends earlier, and I think we're all maybe on the same page. It's going to be Trent Gilson. Do you have anything to add on regarding the tight end?
We got to remember that Matt Dotson's the one who's got the most starting experience, and you know where he's at health wise, I think is a big thing, and you know both his Achilles and his hands, you know, and that's been, he didn't have anything physically wrong with his hands other than dropping passes, and that's been a big reason, I think, why, you know, when you saw Gillison make come those catches in the Pinstripe Bowl, that you thought maybe this is the turn of the corner at that position. But at the same point, you know, Dotson's still going to be the most experienced blocker you have in a bunch of guys that are really, even towards the end of the last year, some of them didn't play because they weren't great blockers.
Or they weren't even tight ends. I mean, that's the other thing about that position. You know, you look at an Adam Burghorst. You know, you've got Hunt, the punter, you know, you've got guys who weren't even at the position. And what's a very complex position, people say tight end next to quarterback is the most complex. And the sense I have of concern there is, I mean, Dotson's incredibly important if he's healthy and 100%, because he is at a position that's asked a lot of in the running pass game. He's probably their most complete player, at least. But Gillison is the guy when I think their best passing target, and they're hoping becomes a complete tight end, because I think if he does, I mean, he's got the frame for it. You're looking at a prototypical NFL guy down the road, and just a guy who can really stretch defenses, which they struggled to do and you know, later years, the D'Antonio era, and do a lot of interesting things with it. If the strength of, you know, if Elijah Collins is healthy and continues to take strides and is the player he was, and those three wideouts as a trio are problems for defenses, and then you have a guy like Gillison who is, you know, last year, like, he made some plays, but he's also lost sometimes, and he really takes steps. All of a sudden, you could have a situation where you really have problems, matchup problems for defenses, and Gillison, as much as anybody, could be a real matchup problem.
Before we both clear out here to give Chris space to talk about the offensive line, I do want to make one note here. 11 players had at least one start on the offensive line for Michigan State last year. That's not what you want. Matt Carrick had 11. Jarvis had 3. Samak 4. Campbell 9. Allen 9. Buter 2. Duplain 5. Higbee 4. Dobbs 1. Reed 13. And Arcuri 5. And of course, Jordan Reed, the only guy who started all 13 games last year, is sitting out this year due to COVID-19. So, Chris, this offensive line, this is definitely one of the heavy restructurings that Mel Tucker and his staff have to undertake.
I don't know if restructuring is the right word, because you do have all those guys coming back with experience. What you have to do is reconfigure, first of all, to figure out which guys mesh at the right spots. Second of all, they got to stay healthy. I mean, I think it's been if I remember, this is off the top of my head, I think it was 16 different combinations of starting offensive linemen the past two seasons. Well, that's not going to win you many games, but you know, they managed to win 14 games despite that. You know, sometimes when you sit there and think about that objectively, that's pretty impressive and surprising that they were able to win as many games as they did with so much influx up front. You know, when I look at this line, you know, there are guys that are young, that are talented. I thought Duplain played well last year. I thought Samak played well last year. Do they get the start? I mean, Luke Campbell's been a versatile veteran guy. He's been a starter since 2017 off and on. Kevin Jarvis got hurt, but he's a guy that, you know, to me last year was forced into playing left tackle because he was their third left tackle option when Cole Chewins went down and Art Curry went down. So then he goes down, ended up going to four different left tackles. Think about that. And like, I think it was maybe the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah. But Chris, the only pushback I would have on this is that half those guys, I mean, they did recruit poorly at tackle. Like they did. I mean, there was a lot. Some of it was absolutely injuries, but you also recruit to a certain level where the guy behind you shouldn't be such a drop off, where the guy behind you should actually be a tackle. There were issues beyond just the injuries for the last few years.
Yeah, but those are issues that can't necessarily be solved by a new coaching staff until they get in the recruiting realm. I mean, you know, they've talked a lot about how improved Spencer Brown is. I haven't heard a word about Devontae Dobbs. I mean, those guys are part of that last recruiting class in 2019 that had a bunch of guards, and those two guys is kind of the bookend tackles. I think right away, if it's me and I'm putting together this line, I'm putting Kevin Jarvis at right tackle to start the year because one, you got to fill that Jordan Reed hole, and two, he's got tackle experience on the other side, and he's played a lot of football.
You don't think it's Luke Campbell over there? Factor. Yeah,
it could be. But I thought I seem to have flashbacks to the last time I saw Luke Campbell outside, and it was at Ohio State, and he kept getting blown by over and over again. So, you know, I think Jarvis, you have to seal the edge, and you know, I think Art Curry and Jarvis, to me, you don't want to move Art Curry because that's the only place he's really repped in a game. Jarvis has moved around, so he's a little more flexible. Campbell's flexible as well, but I think he's an interior guy, like we talked about. They've got a lot of guards.
The offensive line is sort of threefold. One, it's you do have some experience there. You have a ton of starts, and so you should. And Jordan Reed is a big loss, but it's that maybe this is a time where, you know, if those guys are healthy, they're seniors, there's experience, it helps. And then the JD Duplains and the Devontae Dobbs, and we'll see what those guys are. That the younger guys that the D'Antonio staff was excited about that class are now ready to be in roles where they're, you know, I think Duplain will be, but where they're at least, you know, capable depth. And, you know, and then maybe you're okay and you take some steps. It's just seeing is believing with this group. Like the idea that this offensive line would get a push against a decent Big Ten defensive line is something I can't picture because I haven't seen it. And since they, you know, ram the ball down Iowa's throat with LJ Scott 22 times and on that final drive, it's been that long since they've done that to anybody of any quality.
Well, and you got to remember that group is long, long, long gone.
Yeah.
I mean, and a lot of these guys were, you know, many of them were playing in 2017. I mean, you know, 2018. I talked to a former player who played in the NFL who is adamant that the two best linemen are Nick Samak and JD Duplain from the game film last year. So you're talking about two second year guys who got late season experience, and, you know, you've got, and that would be Samak at center over Matt Allen, who's a senior. So, you know, I've heard from a lot of people that Tucker is very much on the best player plays train. So would he be able, would he do that? And how would that affect the locker room? Cause I think that's another part that we never really talk about when you had veteran guys that have been around the program for that long and paid their dues and maybe feel, not necessarily say entitled, but feel like they've put in the work to do that, it causes a ripple effect if they get bypassed by a younger player.
No, the politics change, and that's for that. That can be
that
tough.
True.
Like you've earned your due to be next in line, and all of a sudden that you've got to prove it all over again. I think that's a hard place for some kids.
Okay, well let's move on to the defensive line a little bit, where the Spartans really have
to. Well, I think we need to revisit. I think we need to revisit the running back situation, though. I mean, even though they've got Elijah Collins back as a starter, I mean, what you're not going to get through a year with one guy. And, you know, right now they've got 5-6 guys behind him that are competing to be that number two guy, which will be interesting to see how it goes. I think it's going to be Connor Hayward by experience and, you know, the whole thing we've heard about them wiping the slate clean. But, you know, Brandon Wright's a bigger back. That's a different look. Anthony Williams is more in that Hayward realm where he could flex out and you can do some different things there. Maybe you see some two back sets. Maybe you see some of the true freshmen, whether it be Simmons or Eglin, to because there's no tape on them. I mean, you know, that's I don't necessarily think that we're going to see Elijah Collins be a 30 carry a game guy. I don't think he can. I don't think he's built for that just yet.
No, I think the Hayward coming back was a big deal, and I mean, obviously he Elijah Collins is your featured guy unless somebody emerges. It's not going to be Hayward, but I think he is somebody you can rely on in pass protection. You can use. He's so versatile in terms of the passing game. Reliable. He's been a good back. He's not a bad running back. He's just, I don't think he's dynamic enough to be your, you know, to be somebody who makes something out of nothing type guy, which you sometimes need and you may need with this line a little bit. But yeah, I do agree. And I'll be curious to see what happens behind them. Because the other thing is, and I remember talking to Dave Warner about this when they had the three running backs a few years ago. He goes, you know, it's just hard to play three. Like, if guys are healthy, really, it's a two-back deal. It's hard to have a real role for a third guy. And so I will be curious to see how that all evolves.
Chris, do you think it would be Williams, or do you think it would be Hayward the number two if you had to pick today?
If it was me, I would pick Hayward because of the blocking element of it. I think that's when you've got a new quarterback, you absolutely need that. And, you know, there are ways, and this is, I think, there were some things that were lost in translation last year when Connor Hayward was the starter and, you know, went behind Elijah Collins. And, you know, it's not that he's not a great athlete. I think he's a tremendous athlete. I think people forget how good of an athlete he was. The guy played quarterback and linebacker and safety and all these positions in high school. He's got an NFL pedigree in his background. It's about usage. And I think he's one of those guys that you can use him a bunch of different ways. Here's the thing. Do you need a tight end? Could you use him as an H-back and use him in a blocking role where he can actually get out and get in the slot and make plays or come across a formation? It's all about being creative with a guy like him. And also with Williams, I think, you know, that's one of the things that Mel Tucker said. We don't want to be predictable to the point where, well, Anthony Williams is in the game, so we know we're going to pass, you know, because other teams can set up and realize, well, he's not going to be able to block, so he's going to go out in a route. So, I mean, that's where we don't know a lot about what Jay Johnson's going to do. But I think that Hayward's versatility and athleticism allows them to be flexible and do some things creatively on that offense.
Good running back talk. Let's move on to the defensive line there, where they've got three significant losses in Kenny Willekes, Raekwon Williams, and Mike Panishuk. Chris, you've written quite a bit about the front seven, and obviously the defensive line is part of that. Kind of what are you kind of seeing when it comes to the defensive line?
To me, I think that's the one area where you may see the quickest turnaround from those guys. I think that they had a 2A or a 1A starting group last year in the middle with Naquan Jones and Jacob Slade. I think those two guys are big, and I think they love those other big guys, the two Jalen Hunt, who redshirted last year, and Deshaun Mallory, who I think got a little bit of field time and flashed, but wasn't really needed because they had four guys. Ron Burton always called it, or Mike Tressel last year actually called it, a pair and a spare is what he wants at the D tackle and DN spot. So there wasn't much room for a fifth guy last year because Panishuk and Raekwon Williams got most of the snaps. And then those other two guys were great. How can they handle a starters load. That'll be interesting, particularly without the typical off season. But I think they're fine in the middle. But the edge has been an issue since that 2016 recruiting class disappeared. I think that, you know, Jacob Panasiuk opting back in is huge because he's, from what I've seen, I think he's maybe the best returning pass rusher, the true pass rusher in the Big Ten. But how much of that is based on having Kenny Wilkes opposite him will be play out in the field. I think the guy to watch is Michael Fletcher. I think that Fletcher's got the reach. He's got size. He's got the motor to do that. And that's no knock on Drew Beasley. I think Drew Beasley, you know, is one of those guys that has maximized his talents, very similar to Kenny Wilkes in that way. But I think Fletcher's got the type of talent that you can't keep off the field. But they're thin. They're thin on the edge. And that's, you know, that's been a problem for a couple of years. So how do you deal with that? I mean, is that could be another area where you see some scheme things.
I think the edge those guys are hard to find. And they got lucky with Willekes that really saved them after, Josh King, especially going way back. And until they have that, when you've got questions at corner and you've got questions on the edge, I think it's a major concern. It's you know, when you face a capable quarterback and receiver game, that they're going to be able to shut people down. I want to not – this may age horribly, and so by the time people listen to this, this may be a horrible thing to bring up. But the breaking news right now is that Washtenaw County has issued a two-week stay-at-home order for U of M students. And I don't know if Minneapolis qualifies as home. So that's just interesting. Interesting news.
Well, that's also – how many weeks?
2 weeks.
Well, guess within a week?
Yeah.
The Michigan game, Michigan State game. So that game is supposed to be in Washtenaw County.
Right.
So, yeah, not only breaking news that affects this week, but next week. This is the world we live in, and it's going to be fluctuating and fluid like this for quite some time.
Yeah, with no bye weeks built into the schedule, it's going to be hard to adjust things for situations like that. Okay, well, let's move on to the linebackers here. I don't know if Luke Fulton and Charles Willekes were in line to be starters or anything like that, but it was revealed yesterday, I believe it was broken by Matt Wenzel of MLive, that they were arrested in a September altercation at a Michigan State fraternity house and have been suspended indefinitely from the team. At the very least, that affects the depth chart, at least the 2-deep, especially with Luke Fulton, a guy who I believe was a high-level recruit coming out of high school in Ohio.
Yeah, I got the information about the fraternity house being involved in that situation. So, I mean, you've seen those type of things happen over the course of the years. But I do think, though, that Fulton was a guy, when you need a middle linebacker, that was a guy that when Mark D'Antonio recruited him, they gushed over that kid and thought that he was a natural middle linebacker. So when you're already hurting at linebacker as it is, you lost Joe Bocci. You had struggles last year filling that middle spot, so you moved Tyreek Thompson over. Noah Harvey didn't seem like the fit then, and also Antoine Simmons, they needed his speed on the edge. You know what happened there? I don't know. I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic. They love Chase Klein. I think that, you know, he's a kid. You talk about the need for a pass rush. I mean, they put him as a down lineman on end last year when they had some injuries, when Jack Camper was hurt. And, you know, that's a kid that can get to the quarterback, but you need the depth. You know, the Fulton situation, I think, adds a big layer and a big opportunity for Marcel Lewis, who is a guy that opted out initially and opted back in. I think Marcel Lewis becomes all of a sudden potentially a rotational piece along with Jezler Boateng, but they still got to find that guy in the middle. What do you do? I mean, Graham, if this is part of the complexity of what we're dealing with right now without not really knowing much. You know, are they going to play 4-3? Are they going to go 3-4? Or here's one, could they go 4-2-5 and maybe drop another defensive back who's got linebacker capabilities like Michael Dowell in there and have that as their setup? It's going to be interesting to see how Hazleton approaches this.
Yeah, and you know, it's tricky because to this point, he had kind of hinted that they'd play 4-3 because that's what they knew, right? And that's what they had sort of previously recruited to, and they didn't want to change it up too much. You have to wonder where this, you know, you want to play to your strengths. You don't want to see it too complex. I've seen defenses struggle with, new defenses that are overly complex. And you've got not having that guy in the middle, not having an edge guy on the line, not having corners you know about. I mean, it is. I mean, this is just me. I think, and I know not everybody feels this, I think this defense is going to struggle mightily. And I think the key for the team is going to be the offense. Because look, it's not that they don't have talent at linebacker; they have some talent. And but it's, you know, you don't have that guy who's a natural in the middle. And if you take an Antoine Simmons and put him there, you're losing what he gives you on the edge. I don't think they want to do that. And I think it's a little bit of a tough situation.
Yeah, and that's why I wonder what they do from a schematic standpoint. I don't necessarily know if you have the numbers to run 3-4, but you do have the numbers in the back end with all those guys at safety to maybe bump someone up. Maybe, you know, even some of the guys that you haven't really heard of, those younger kids, like I said, like a Michael Dowell, or maybe that's a role for Dominique Long, because he's bounced between corner and safety. I mean, they've got a lot more depth at the back end to me that, you know, if I'm looking at this, I say, boy, there's a chance they could go 4-2-5 and get an extra defensive back, or even bump a guy like Dowell up as a linebacker. So, you know, but again, there's no game tape, so no practice tape, no B-roll, nothing.
So just to butt in here again, so we don't have wrong information out there, athletics is not part of – athletics can proceed, because, of course, athletics can make money and isn't part of public health. So they're going to let athletics play.
That explanation is a bizarre one all the way around.
I explained it all that well, but it is what it is.
Well, we're kind of already talking about the defensive back, so let's transition to the no-fly zone. It appears to – you know, be a decent strength of the Michigan State defense, as we kind of talked about with Julian Barnett and Xavier Henderson back on that side of the ball. Graham, I'm going to have you go first here. What kind of you see out of the defensive backfield, considering they do have to replace Josiah Scott and Josh Butler, who were two significant players for that team last year?
Yeah, I don't think Butler struggled. He was a veteran player. I don't think that's something you expect to be able to replace a player of that caliber. The question is, you know, the year before with a guy like a Justin Lane and then Josiah Scott last year, those are the guys that you got to have another one. Because we saw last year when they didn't have any corner opposite who was ready to go, what happened at Ohio State. I mean, the Ohio State game that they played so well as anybody played Ohio State all year for a quarter into the second quarter a little bit. Other than those two turnovers by the offense, I mean, the defense, there was physical. Anyway, that turned on Ohio State realizing that Michigan State didn't have another corner. And then it turned on Michigan State's defense losing trust in each other because it was trying to make up for things because it knew it wasn't solid across the board. And so if you get to a point now where, now granted, I don't know if either corner is worthy of not being picked on. I think, you know, that. I think Shakur Brown is the guy they think's their best guy, the guy they're talking up. I think he was pretty okay at the end of last year, but he's not Josiah Scott, or wasn't yet. And so I think that's a position of real, real concern for them.
Here's one for you. What if the starting defensive backfield is Julian Barnett and Angelo Gross?
It's possible.
I mean, that's a real possibility. Gross comes from a similar pedigree and background as Josiah Scott. They loved the kid when he early enrolled and started to get on campus, and he's a smart kid. But they also love the idea of moving Barnett over there. Now, I don't know where Barnett is in the transition back, but it's his natural position. And I was watching a couple things back just randomly the other day, and there was one interception where you saw Barnett end up making a tackle that I thought was a cornerback type tackle. And that's something that Mel Tucker wants. He wants a guy that can do all things, cover, tackle, and pursue. And listen, Brown and Gervin, I think, are very good players as well. So they've got some options there, and they've talked up everybody. I mean, when we talked about the quarterback and they brought up Noah Kim, I mean, they've talked up everybody. They talked up Davion Williams. They've talked up Chris Jackson, Dominique Long, who's bounced around in his position more than, you know, I mean, more than anybody that I can remember at Michigan State. Maybe Jeremy Langford is the closest to having more position changes than Dominique Long. But, know, I think there's that one is to me going to be a completely wide open thing that when we see it on game day, there may be some surprises there.
Let's move quickly here to special teams. In case you guys have some thoughts on that, I think it'd be interesting to watch Matt Coughlin. He had a really good, you know, consistently percentage wise first 2 years, and then last year was not very good at all. I believe 22 of 32 on field goals, if I remember correctly. And, you know, maybe he set expectations pretty high for himself and wasn't quite there last year. But I don't think there's a serious challenger to that either. Do you guys have any special teams insights you kind of want to, we should look at? Or,
well, I'll say this, you know, I think at kicker, you know, he was not, he was really good 2 years ago, and he was, you know, hold your breath every time last year. And they need the guy from 2 years ago. And this is not a team that can leave points off the board this year. If they get the consistency out of him that he's shown at certain points in his career, that'll make a big difference. And frankly, in a year where you've got some games against teams like Iowa and Northwestern and maybe even Rutgers, I mean, we don't know about any of these teams. It's very hard to know. It could be the difference in two or three wins. So I think that's big, that the punting game, we've seen the impact that has when they don't have a guy. So we'll see how good they are there. And then in the return game, like we talked earlier, I think that is a position where they can take a significant step and really need to.
Yeah. And I don't want to skip the safeties either, because I think that, you know, replacing David Dahl is huge. But you know, they obviously Xavier Henderson is going to be the heart of the defense. I think that's one thing that to keep in mind. And, you know, whether it's Trey Person or Michael Dahl, or even if Darius Snow comes in there to take a job, I think that's important. But I think, you know, going back to what Graham kind of said with Coughlin, I mean, Olsen could push him. I mean, Olsen's a kid that they were very high on. You know, Mitchell Crawford at punter, you know, they brought in a graduate transfer to take over for Hartbarger, but they've got two other guys who have punted in Tyler Hunt and Bryce Behringer. By the way, we never even talk about Tyler Hunt at tight end. So let's leave that out of the conversation for now. But I think, you know, another thing that is going to be interesting too is who does the returns and which returns. I mean, you know, we've got, I think we, you've looked at, excuse me, you look at Jaden Reed and Naylor, who's going to fit better maybe on a punt return, or do you not want either of them if they're starting at receiver? Do you go with a Julian Barnett or an Angelo Gross? You know, the guys that have return backgrounds in their history. Do you use Naylor again on kickoffs, or is he too valuable and just go with Anthony Williams and maybe someone else? So I'm curious to see how this staff approaches that, especially not so much the kicker, to me, the return game. Cause I think that there are, that was, we talked about it and you mentioned it, Graham. I mean, that a lot has been left to be desired from that, from Michigan State standpoint, for almost for a decade.
All right, well, let's move on to everybody's favorite segment during our preseason podcast. It is our Big Ten Michigan State picks and over-unders. We are going to start with the Big Ten most overrated team, Graham.
I'm going to go with Penn State. And, obviously there's news on the running back that he may not play, but I don't like what they have at wideout. They lost another guy that either opted out or is injured there as well. But, you know, experienced quarterback, great tight end. I don't think they've got the playmakers they've had. I think there's some holes on the defense. I'm not saying they're going to be a bad football team, but people talk about Penn State as some national contender a little bit this year. And if you're talking about overrated, I think that's a team that won't make it.
I would have gone back to in most years, or shouldn't say in most years, but from last year, when we all were kind of consensus that there's no way Nebraska can be as good as people were hyping them to be. And guess what? We were right. But I'm going to go the other route in the West and say Wisconsin, because I do think that, you know, you've got changes at quarterback now with the Jack Cohn injury. Who knows how long that'll last. If it's a season deal, I think that you've got to replace the running back. You've got all those things that are kind of swirling right now. And I think that, to me, they could be the one that, you know, that the injury, and now granted, they got a 4-star quarterback that's going to take over, but that Mertz kid has yet to take significant snaps in significant games. So, and when you jump right into conference play, you got to be prepped and ready. And I don't know if he's ready for that.
All right. Most underrated team, Chris.
I'm going Minnesota, because I got them to win the West. I just like what they got. I, And if you would have told me 2 years ago that I'd be saying that, that PJ Fleck has that team right where he wants them, I'd probably would have been surprised at myself. But I thought he did a great job last year. It helps to have that tandem back in Morgan and Bateman. But they got a, even though they lose Antoine Winfield in the secondary, they got a good secondary back there. Sneaky. They finished second in the league in pass defense a year ago. So Minnesota, to me, I think is going to surprise a lot of people and sustain and win the West this year.
For me, it's Indiana, and I think Indiana is going to finish good second pick. East behind Ohio State. And it's always dangerous to pick Indiana, right? They always let you down, especially when there's any sort of expectations. I love the quarterback. I love their wideouts. They've got a lot of experience. And I look at the
third different offensive coordinator in 3 years.
I look at the rest of the East, and at Michigan, you've got a lot of unproven guys. You've got guys who have opted out. You got a new quarterback. At Penn State, I don't love their skill position players. You know, at Michigan State, obviously, it's a new regime. I think Indiana is going to be a good football team. I don't know if they're a great football team, but when I look at the rest of the Big Ten East, that is how I think will at least be in a tie for the second spot in the Big Ten East by the end of the season. And they'll beat Penn State, by the way, which is a great play. If you're looking for a play on the money line, it's basically about plus 200. Indiana, not a bad play. Week one.
We allowed to talk gambling now that it's legal? This is our first podcast now that Clint, or I should say first football podcast yes. Now that gambling is legal in the state.
We will have a gambling-type question here toward the end. Big Ten player that excites you the most that is not Justin Fields, Graham.
Oh, it's Rondell Moore. I'm glad he's back. He's just fun to watch. I like watching guys at that. There aren't that many athletes like that in the world. And when they also have football speed, that's pretty damn cool. And Rondell Moore is it for me.
Yeah, I got to go three here because there are three guys not named Justin Fields that I think are exciting to watch, and they're all from non-Ohio State schools. I think. You know, Moore in particular, how he comes back from that injury is going to be interesting to watch. But I think Rashad Bateman is a first round type talent. And I think they're going to chuck the ball around quite a bit, and he'll be interesting to watch. And to Graham's surprise pick, I think Stevie Scott, III. I we got to see him the last couple of years, and he's really blossomed into a pretty good back and got good talent. And I think that the components are around him to have a big year. So, you know, that's maybe sneaking away a little bit by adding three, but listen, when you've got three guys that aren't at the powerhouses that can be on the radar, I think that's great for the Big Ten.
Yeah. And a guy in Indiana, you know, Watt Fillier, Michael Penix, I think it's a really good, yeah. All those guys are interesting, good skill players. And just to get to say Watt Fillier is awesome too. So I'm gonna say
that as well. Yeah. Well, the one thing that I'm nitpicking your pick, and I kind of chimed in there, is that they are on their third offensive coordinator in 3 years. And, you know, that kind of change can be significant. You know, sometimes it's for the better, sometimes it's not. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they handle that, especially now that Penix is the guy and, you know, Ramsey's now the guy at Northwestern.
Indiana, by the way, was the team that showed the way to defeat Michigan State's defense last year, and they never recovered. They never could handle – you remember the way that they played almost underneath. They let the blitz come. They just played in the spaces. They found the openings, and that was offensive coordinator work. And so that is a really good point, Chris, because I think Indiana, while they have a lot of talent, that was schemed as well as any offense I've seen against that Michigan State defense. Yeah. In the time that D'Antonio was
there's a reason Kalen DeBoer got the head coaching job. I think at Fresno State. That's a big reason.
Breakout MSU player that's not Jalen Reed or quarterback, Chris.
Jaden Reed, sorry.
You know, not one of those two guys. I would say, I said Michael Fletcher. I think Michael Fletcher is going to be the guy because I think that, you know, when Mel Tucker talks about wanting to have a physical approach and a relentless defense, that's the guy to me that would epitomize that. If I had to pick a second guy, it might be Julian Barnett. In his move to back the cornerback, but I'm gonna go with Fletcher.
I'll go Trenton Gillison. I think they're gonna have enough at wideout that he's gonna be a real problem for people too. And I think he may not be consistent. It may not be every game, but he is going to be somebody they can really use as a weapon.
MSU touchdown leader, Graham.
All right, I'm not going to go running back because even though I think that Elijah Collins is the featured back and they'll use multiple guys, I don't know what they'll do around the goal line. I don't know how. So because otherwise it would be smart to go running back. I will go with I'll go with Jaden Reed, who had 8 as a freshman at Western and 4-1 game. I mean, it just seems like a common sense pick at this point.
I mean, it's not like the end zone has been, you know, visited very often. But you know, the key to me is you got to be able to get the ball to those receivers for them to be in the end zone. So I'm going to still go with Elijah Collins, as my touchdown leader here, because, you know, I think that's going to be, you know, when defenses tighten up in the red zone and you're a young guy and, you know, they're going to cover the tight ends pretty closely in there. I think that you got to be able to run the ball, and that's been an emphasis point for Mel Tucker and Chris Kapilovich. They want to be able to run the ball when they want and need to. And I think in close is going to be a big reason. I think now how many? Ooh, that's a whole other thing. Maybe 6, 7.
I like it. All right. Big Ten champion, Chris.
No bold prediction. I got Ohio State beating Minnesota.
Yeah. Graham.
Yeah. I think Ohio State is probably the team that's head and shoulders above everybody. If I had to pick, I think Minnesota is an interesting pick out of the other side though. I think I like that. I like that choice. And because I don't think there is a clear favorite, and they return a lot, and they've got it. I mean, I think he's recruited at a fairly high level too.
All right, Graham, who are your college football playoff teams?
So Alabama and Clemson, I think you'd have to be crazy right now not to include those two based on what we've seen. I think Ohio State comes in from the Big Ten, and the Big 12 has sort of eliminated itself in a lot of ways. What gets interesting is we haven't seen the Pac-12 yet, so I have no idea what to expect out of there. Georgia may be a team that gets a second look. I don't love that, and I don't think they win a big SEC championship game. I'm going to throw one out there, a team like Cincinnati, right?
Ooh, BYU?
What's that?
BYU maybe too? I don't know.
BYU hadn't beaten anybody yet, but yeah. I do think there will be a push this year. I mean, some of these group of five schools have – played just these nomad schedules, some against good competition, and have looked fairly good. And I don't think 12 is you know, shown itself to be, you know, better than these guys. Now, you know, if you look at Cincinnati's schedule, for example, they've beaten Austin Peay, Army, and South Florida, none of which are very good teams right now. And they're going to have to run the table and look good doing. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I think if there's ever a year that a non-Power 5 slips in there because of how bad the Big 12 has been from their sort of, you know, mainstays. We'll see what happens with the Pac-12. That could ruin this whole thing. Because I think there will be a little bit of a will to see something like that happen, because there have been some really impressive performances by, and it's going to have to be an unbeaten, of course. You know, from a group of five team, I could see getting in there this year.
I'm with Graham. I mean, you know, the three up front are pretty easy right now to kind of say, with Alabama and Clemson really being head and shoulders above everybody else. And then I think Ohio State will see pretty quickly how dominant they're going to be. And, you know, they though cannot afford to have their annual slip up. This is not the year to do that. You gotta do what you did last year and run the table in the Big Ten and get there. Those three to me, and I still think Georgia. I thought Georgia showed out for basically a little over three quarters, and you know, before Alabama machine turned it on. I just think that they're entertaining football. I think, you know, the Big 12 is just not good. I think that, you know, the other conferences aren't going to necessarily have that marquee team. Maybe if I'm looking at another Power Five, you know, North Carolina seemed like they were going to be going down that route. But
here's the problem with Georgia, right, is that Georgia probably a two-loss to Alabama. I just don't think a two-loss team in a shortened season is gonna get in. You know, if they split with Bama, I think both those teams would get in. But I think that's what it would take. You know.
Yeah, had that Florida State game not happened, I thought North Carolina was positioning themselves to get there. But you know, I still got to go with Georgia. I mean, I think there's just too much talent and too many eyeballs. I mean, let's face it. I mean, and again, this is all supposition that we're going to get to that point. I mean, we don't know what November, December are going to look like. We've already seen, you know, 20, 30 some games already canceled without having the Big Ten and Pac-12 on the field. So, and all these other conferences, the group of five conferences. So, you know, we're really in a wait and see, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen in those other conferences that have been playing. I mean, you've seen Florida today, as we record this, had, I think, 30 some guys that were either in isolation or quarantine. So yeah, it's, you know, this is our best guess at this moment based on the information that we have and know today, which who knows when you'll listen to it, but that's essentially how you have to cash and, you know, and couch every single thing that you say right now.
All right, Chris, who's your national champion?
I think to me, it's Clemson. Yeah. I think that, you know, they've got the most dynamic in terms of running and passing and defense that to me, I think Clemson, after knocking on the door again last year to get it, I think they get back to it again this year.
Graham, is it going to be almost MSU football coach Luke Fickell in Cincinnati as your natty?
No, I got to go Bama. I get so annoyed with Dabo these days that sure. I can't pick him just because I'm annoyed by him.
All right. Well, I'm going to skip over the next two and jump to Rocky Lombardi. Rocky Lombardi, over under 6.5 starts. Graham.
Oh, so, and I'm saying they play 9 games.
Yes,
here.
This,
okay.
This is under both of these next two are both with 9 games.
Okay. Over under 6.5. I will say I'm going to give him the benefit and say over.
Chris?
I'm going to say under.
Ooh.
Not by much. I think it's going to be about 5.
I debated whether to set that at 6.5 or 7.5. I think 6.5 was the winning number to put it at here. All right, MSU over under 3.5 wins. Chris,
I got them barely over 4.
Graham,
and remember there is that ninth game also out there.
Yeah,
this is going to be a ninth game beyond the schedule.
9 games.
Yeah, this is for 9 games. Over under 3.5. That line is from sportsbetting.ag, I think. So that was for the 9 game schedule. So yes.
Yeah, I have not seen many season win lines out there because I think
I know I had to go scouring.
Yeah, you got to be in Venezuela or someplace because books don't know what to do with the idea of 2 games being canceled and so many of these lines being negated or whatever. But I will go over. I have them going 3-5 and then a toss up. You know, winning that ninth game against a Purdue game in the Superior Dome in Marquette, you know, that was my prediction. So I'll go over. I think 3.5 is about the right line, though.
All right, our last question here: Michigan State, when I wrote this last night, is a 12.5 point favorite over Rutgers on DraftKings. Do the Spartans cover, Graham?
So I would not bet them to cover, but I would not bet Rutgers, and I'm not playing. And if I were to bet one way or another, I'd bet them to cover. And people keep saying, "Oh, you know." They're young. Look, Michigan State has had some very mediocre teams over the last 4 years, and they have blown out Rutgers 3 of those 4 years. I mean, they were the 3-9 year, they beat Rutgers like 45-0. And I'm not saying there'll be good energy with Rutgers. It's early in the season, new regime. And I don't know what they have. 2 years ago, the fact they had 2 really good corners made it really difficult on Michigan State, and it was 14-10. So, but I would say if you made me bet one way or another, this is a game I would call a stay away. There are better games this week to play, Indiana. But if you're not gonna, if you're gonna bet it, I would not bet. I would, you know, betting Rutgers seems insane to me.
Chris,
I would bet Rutgers to cover on this just because I think Schiano's a defensive coach, and I think it's just going to be, you know, more slogging possession based rather than a shootout. But I think it's going to be a close game. I think Michigan State wins it, but I think I've got like 20-13 on this one. So, you know, I see them covering at 12.5. But listen, when you got a defensive-minded coach against a defensive-minded coach, points will be at a premium. I mean, especially when the offenses are not that great.
Graham, do you have Michigan State winning?
Yes, I do. I have Michigan State winning. I think you have to go on based on everything you know, and I do think defensively they're going to give up points to everybody. But I think offensively they'll be better than people think.
All right. Well, I think that'll wrap up this week's show. Unless you guys have anything else you want to add.
No, it's good to be back. It's good to be talking about games. Look forward to next week and doing this again.
We're gonna be back here on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I know a lot of people were wondering about why we haven't been on the regular. I mean, usually with the chaos that's gone on, you know, doing this weekly is a little bit difficult, especially when you got vacations that need to be used that couldn't have been used earlier. Unprecedented things that really we had to take a little, I don't want to say mental break, because I don't need to take a mental break from you guys, but we'll be back now for football and basketball season, and you know, we'll see how long it goes.
You're going to be sick of us by the end of April, guys.
And you want to tease your later in the week thing?
Yes, we will be starting a second Spartan Speak podcast during the week, which will come up in 2 days. It'll be me and Nate Atkins, where it's going to be mostly Nate, me chipping in terms of film breakdown. And Nate is going to go into the film room and take a look at Michigan State's opponent that was and their upcoming opponent. So we'll talk a little about Rutgers on Thursday, and we'll talk mostly about Michigan State, too, because I think that's where the interest is right now. There isn't too much to preview or review in that regard, especially with Michigan State having Rutgers having a new coach as well. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Grant_Couch, at Chris Solari, at Phil_Friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.